Hey, this is Martin Early of the Ballroom Thieves. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. How the hell are you? It's Scott here. It's Mike there. It's you there, listening in your most comfortable chair, I assume. Mike?
See, I got a weird imagination, and you don't want to know where I think our audience really are at right now.
Well, enlighten me. Where do you think, like, our audience would most likely be listening to us?
Craps players. Like old school in the alley, throwing some dice with dollar bills on the ground, you know, kind of very 1970s greaser kind of deal, something like that. So just want to imagine what most Verbal Shenanigans audience members do.
So you think our podcast has a seedy element to it, like
on a street level. We got a little bit of the dark underground web going here. I mean, you can't just go and listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
Not that dark though.
Stitcher, Podbean, stuff like that. No. You gotta have the hookup. You know, after you win a couple rounds, the boss man comes over. Yo, kid, you did a good job. Listen, don't tell anybody. He hands him like a paper bag. Something special in there for you. And that's our episode with Al Snow.
I like to hear in your head how you picture our audience. It's I don't know if it's a compliment or it's just downright insulting, but I think I see where you're going.
At the very least, it's quite entertaining. I can totally see Don Bagnano doing that right now.
No. If there is Don Bagnano is just definitely in sweatpants. There's no doubt he's wearing sweatpants. Probably has some either mob movie or horror movie on the screen and just holding his baby and just being very, very, very Dom-like. But anyway, everybody, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. We are a weekly podcast, a weekly show that simply tries to find, really interesting guests. And I guess we also try to have some fun along the way, talk about life, play some stupid games. Basically, if you go to any episode, you can kind of figure us out in a nutshell here. It's a little bit different each week, but it's also a little bit the same each week. There's the familiarity. Why does it sound wrong?
Because you're saying it.
Familiarity. Anyway.
Familiarity, yes. It's a continuous potpourri, if you will.
That's the next stickers we're going to get. Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, there you go.
Continuous potpourri. But anyway, brother. Good. Welcome back to another thrilling week of this episode. Episode 249.
Scott, there's some magical number then after that, ain't there? Huh?
Well, no. Huh? Not really. But it is interesting to think about that, you know, when we kind of started doing this, we made like a kind of a fake show, a fake big deal out of episode 50. And, brother, we have now done five times that amount of podcasts.
That's really something, you know. I mean, you've gone five times that amount. I still need 24 episodes after this. Episode 274, you're going to see the most magical Berlew to ever come across these airwaves here. I mean, it's just going to be like, everybody be like, oh, man, he brought his A game for his 250, unlike Scott his regular 250.
So what you're saying is you owe me 24 episodes worth of content.
Well, no, I'm going to half-ass the next 23.
Oh.
But then that 24th one, oh, man. It's going to be legendary, man.
See, I had assumed you had half-assed the first 249, and you were just going to really bring it next week for 250.
It depends on the day. Sometimes a quarter-ass it, sometimes a full-ass it. But once in a blue moon, three-quarter acid. I mean, that's that's kind of rare. You know, you got to get me in a special mood for that. But that day, it's all Burlew all the time.
Now, is this going to be similar to the time that you recorded your own, like, 10-minute rant on the podcast that it's sitting somewhere in the pile with the Veedverks and Marilyn Monroe lady?
That's just going to – that's a sample size, Scott. that's a – mini episode. It's like, I know you can't handle it yet. That's why we're putting it away.
If our old recording device didn't, you know, combust, I really wish we can go dig that up and kind of play it and kind of analyze what the hell was going on that day.
Let's see if I can recall stuff I brought up. I remember being in Bulgaria, not Bulgaria, Turkey, broke and couldn't get fresh towels. And I had a Discover card, and the Discover card's really not used in Turkey. It was somewhere in that range. I don't know how I got there, but that was around the midpoint, if you will.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you could always pepper those stories in for us throughout these years of, years to come of episodes that we have coming up. But I guess, guys, if you tuned in last week, we had we had Tim Woods on, who was a professional dungeon master. Burlew, have you polished up on your goblins and your ghouls? Are you all in, is what I'm saying?
I thought it was doing well, and then somebody told me I was playing Scrabble.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, it did not work out well in that game.
Can you not bring your friend that thinks he talks about goblins the whole time? For God's,
why are you rolling a die? That makes no sense in this game.
For God's sake, I asked him if he wanted to drink, and he said, I don't trust you, goblin, and threw something in my eye. Your friends are weird, yeah, Gary.
My wife is blind in the other eye. She really doesn't want them back anymore.
Your friends are weird, Gary. Stop bringing them over for card night. It's getting strange. But last week would be
Spirits of Aglar. Help me find a letter Z in this bag.
Last week was a good example of an episode. Now we've had some we've had a lot of big names over the years, but that would be a perfect example of someone you would never maybe hear of, but you know, it kind of brings an original story to the table. But I guess Burlew, happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Callie and Stubby did not get me anything as usual.
Gotcha. What do you think about when people put happy Father's Day, and they're not actually father, they're like you and I, they're just owners of dogs?
I mean, if they're being playful and just going along, that's fine. If somebody wants to be like, oh, you know, I don't have a child, but I feel that I would be a good father, and this day embarks on what is to be my future, or something philosophical like that. It'd be quiet. Just call you. I went out with my dad. I bought him a Reuben. We called it, played some pinochle, called it a night.
I bought him a Reuben. So thank you for really telling us the details of your father today. Reuben, pinochle, call it a night.
I gave him a card somewhere in the middle, which is good because I had a reputation while I lived in New Jersey of buying Mother's and Father's Day cards and birthday cards and constantly forgetting to actually mail them the card.
So you had a collection?
Oh, yeah. When I moved out and we sent the picture to my parents, I literally had eight cards for my dad and six for my mom. I would constantly buy them. And then, 2 weeks after the event, I'm like, son of a! I'd be like, all right, I'll use it next year. And then I try to find it. I'm like, son of a! And then we just repeat the cycle.
That's nearly a decade of forgetting Father's Day.
I was atrocious. I was not the best son. As my dad is probably listening to this episode, so howdy, Pops.
Listen, this is nothing your dad doesn't know. He's, you know, he knows you're a terrible son. But So let me ask you. So now that you have moved down to Georgia, Florida, you see you get to see your parents quite. Have you, you see your brother a whole lot more. Have you found yourself kind of becoming closer and closer to family in these later years now, as opposed to?
Yeah.
Well, I know you were always pretty close with your dad.
Yeah, I mean, things have been very great with dad, mom, my brother. I mean, just being able to do the. You know, weekends we generally are able to go see each other, and it's a good feeling. There's no stress. There's no thought about, all right, we got to spend a bunch of money to go to have some fun. You know, we could just go over each other's house and shoot the crap, if you will. And, you know, it's just an hour away, so it's relaxing. And, you know, we hang out different things. We're trying to plan different stuff. We go into a Braves game and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a lot better. It's a good time, you know.
Now,
I lost my microphone.
Oh, there I am.
My answer intrigued you that much, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. My mic cut out for some reason, but probably because it's time to get some new cables. But so, like, do you find yourself ever missing New Jersey?
Brutal. I mean. There is not a ton that I could think of because in the end of the game, I like this job a lot more than the Jersey job. I have a house versus an apartment.
Yep.
Got a nice yard where the dog can go out. I can just let her out versus the need to have to leash her everywhere. Have family here. I got a few friends down here too. I mean, outside of pizza and bagels... Not a huge, like, oh, my God, I'm so now, depressed.
What's the strangest thing you ever got paid to do?
That's an interesting question.
I mean, mine might be what happened in the last 2 weeks. Mine might have been modeling for that mattress company, which I did throw up on our page. The first photo came out. There's supposed to be a whole bunch more. But I was thinking about this the other day. I've had so many random jobs and things like whether it was like working at a train store, which model trains. I remember when I first started video work, I had to go to the guy called me up. It was like through Craigslist or something. He's like, hey, you got a camera? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, we're going to go to Spike Lee's releasing a movie, and it's a BET party. So I go there, and there's no Spike Lee anywhere to be found. But there were a lot of people, but we were just at a bar. Like, I was just sitting there with a camera just, like, filming people. It was very, very, very awkward. I'm lucky I did not get shot or punched or
people would be just looking at you like, what, I want a Jack and Coke. What the hell do you want?
Exactly. Essentially, yes.
Can you put some more passion into this and all? Like, can you... pick up the cherry inside the drink and nibble on it and kind of giggle. Think about something whimsical. That'd be great for my movie.
And then, obviously, I was talking about recently, a couple episodes back, I was talking about my lake security job. That was fun when I was on the lake patrol. Yeah. Drive around in this beat up truck. I would stop home for hours at a time. I think I got paid $10 an hour. It was really like just a complete BS job. It was a little side job. But you'd work like 6 hours. It was so boring.
I'm trying. I had a job. It was a computer job with Burlington Coat Factory, but it was pretty much just working to print out the labels that goes into the coats. So that was a pretty boring ass job. It was like Friday to Monday, so I gave up my weekends doing that. There was working the parking lot at Six Flags where I had to wear a sailor outfit was a uniform.
was it like what kind of sailor are we talking? Are we talking like the stereotypical like white sailor outfit with like the Dixie cup hat and the blue like smock kind of thing?
We didn't have a hat. We had like, yeah, I would say the white shirt with like all the buttons in the front and long kind of white khaki pants with it.
Ugh. Not only is it a miserable job, everyone seeing you in that sailor outfit knows you're miserable too. No one's like, look at the happy sailor in the parking lot.
I didn't care. It was side money, and I got into the park for free. So I mean, half the time I just look at somebody, I'm like, yeah, go ahead. I don't care. Like, you know, somebody would come up with that big block of tickets for like the company. And so like 10 people be in a car, but there'd be 10 free parking things. So I just rip all 10 out. And then the next person would come out. I'm like, you're good.
Yeah.
Scan. You're good. Scan. I was giving out flyers for my brother's business inside all the Six Flags info.
Now, do you think maybe you could go to Six Flags now, do that, and maybe hand out like podcast business cards for us? Maybe put that sailor out, strap that sailor outfit on one more time for the cause.
You're talking a comeback, Scott.
A comeback, exactly.
It's been a while since I've been a parking lot sailor. I don't know.
Baloo, the parking lot sailor. No, I mean,
that's a video I'd be down for. No, if you ever came down here and we did a Verbal Shenanigans video, I think I'd be down for Burlew the parking lot sailor.
The reason I kind of brought it up because before I'm at, you know, not only I you know, you see the people twirling the signs for like the liquid, you know, companies or the mattress company, whatever it is, like twirling them at the intersections. And I saw it, I was just thinking, like, man, like, sometimes my job's terrible, but that's just awful. That's got to be the – because everyone knows, like, you're not happy to be there. And those guys stand there forever.
Yeah, and I'm down here in Georgia. It will get 95 degrees, and I see a guy twirling there. I'm like, how on earth are you paid enough? And I always kind of wonder, has anybody ever bought a mattress from saying, I saw the guy twirling there. I'm like, I got to find out what this is like.
I might.
And I was pleasantly surprised.
I mean, maybe if you had that sailor outfit on, I'd be tempted to go check the mattresses out. But, you know, like, it's sometimes I just look at these jobs. And it's not even like, okay, like, maybe you get it, whatever. What are you going to make the most doing that? $100 a day? I don't know. And then, like, you go to apply for another job. They're not going to be like, I see you have a sign twirling experience. Let's give you let's hire this guy as the CEO of my company. Like, it's almost like a job that can't really get you anywhere else.
They call your references. They're like, I gotta be honest with you, his twirling was way off. I mean, I don't know how much twirling is involved at IBM, but if you need it, I can't recommend this.
He lost several signs into the highway.
There was so many accidents because the sign flew out of his hand, hit a windshield. The police came there every day. Like, how did it happen again?
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, there's that job. Like, I don't see any room for growth. Even if you work at McDonald's, right, you start as a cashier, you can work your way up the corporate structure of McDonald's and actually make a good living. You know, like, you can get up there. But I don't know. The guy twirling the signs, I don't know. And, like, even today, I went to the market after, like, I got out of the gym and went to the market to grab something for us to cook for dinner. And I go to grab a piece of fish, and I go to this little, like, it's kind of like a little Asian market with like vegetables, and they always have good fish prices, so I always go there. And just the guy, like, I'm sitting there just admiring this guy. He's cleaning like 6-7 fish, like scrubbing the scales off, the guts are flying everywhere, and he's cleaning them. I'm like, now this guy is overqualified for his job. He's just like, you know, I can't imagine that. He's getting paid a lot, and I look at that, and I'm like, it would take me a half hour just to do one fish. He did 5 of them in like 3 minutes. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's some good skills, man. I don't know. I would just chop the head off and go, here you go. That's pretty much it.
All the blood.
The scales are the nutritional part. It's like kale.
All the blood just dripping out the back of it. Just. Sir, I don't think this is right. Carry on. Next.
Yeah, we really should have killed that fish before you chopped its head off. People don't really like the floppy fish that you're serving them, Perlu. I gotta be honest with you.
We're gonna have to let you go. It's back to the parking lot with you.
To the damn sign. Subway's over here. Oh. I'm sorry, officer. I killed another one.
But, yeah, I mean, I look at the guy at Chipotle who could, like, fold a burrito. Like, that's amazing to me. Like, I don't know. Like, ever make a burrito by yourself and keep it all in that size?
I keep it quesadilla. I keep it simple. Flip over, done.
You can't step it up to the burrito.
I haven't tried, but, you know, I guarantee you I'll be looking at YouTube videos for an hour before I attempt it. I'm going to figure this out. Maybe I'll do it like a bag and all. I just pour everything in the middle, then twist it up and put a little tie on it. And here you go, honey.
I think
it's eat the rope. It's good. It's like the fish scales I told you about earlier.
I think that's a good idea. Maybe you should do a burrito, a Berlo's cooking segment where you just, I give you a thing and you just got to go for it. You can't read anything.
Scott, do I have to wear the sailor outfit again?
No, like what if I told you, all right, Berlo, today you're making us a burrito and like, you know, you just have the ingredients in front of you and you just got to figure it out. Or today, Berlo, you're making red snapper. Like, go ahead. So for the last month or two, maybe even more, I came across a band called the Ballroom Thieves. One day while I was working out, they came across my Spotify. And I really fell in love with the band, really like a lot of their stuff. So I reached out to them, and they kind of have like a vintagey, kind of folky, sometimes jazzy sound. They do a lot of different things. Sometimes they're female singer. Sometimes they have two different male singers. So they got a lot of different things going on. So I got in touch with Martin Early, who is their guitarist and vocalist. I guess you could say one of the vocals in the band, and we're going to give him a call. And they're a really cool band. So, let's nice. Give him a shout. First off, Martin, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, and thanks for giving us a few minutes here. We appreciate the time.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Where are we calling you at right now?
I'm up in Midcoast, Maine.
Is that where you guys are from?
Yeah, I kind of grew up here, starting in middle school, further north in Maine, actually, but. But yeah, two of us live here now, and then our drummer lives down in Portland, Maine.
Oh, nice.
I love
Maine.
City.
The furthest I've been in Maine is Moosehead Lake. That was a long, long drive.
Oh, that's far up there, yeah.
There's nothing up there.
That's north of the wall, as they say.
Wildlings, wildling territory. But yeah. Martin, I was saying right before you came on, I guess about 3 months ago or something, one of your songs, Archers, popped on my Spotify while I was working out, and I really, really dug this song and kind of dove headfirst into the band and really kind of went backwards, went from kind of modern stuff all the way back to you. Now, you guys have been around for a decent amount of time. Where did you guys start? Did you guys start as just a couple of friends jamming together, or how did you guys start the band?
The band as it exists right now started about 5 or 6 years ago, and Devin, the drummer, and I went to college together and started playing together after that, and we were mostly just doing kind of my own singer-songwriter stuff that was terrible. And but we were kind of trying, testing the waters, and we wanted to tour, which we had no idea what that meant at the time, but you know, we just kind of wanted to get out there. So
right.
We just started playing shows and a few years later started the band, and then found Callie, the current cellist and bass player, during an open mic in Cambridge.
That's awesome. Now going from, I guess, your last album to the first one, there, you guys really have kind of covered a lot of different music types and seem to have changed some softer, some a little bit more aggressive, some adding different tempos and whatnot from, you know, it definitely, you could, it almost sounds like a couple different bands at different points, especially when the three of you guys are also all singers and whatnot. But early on, right. did you guys have... Were you influenced by, I guess you could say, maybe folk music or anything? Like, who were your big influences growing up?
My personal influences were all over the place. Right. I grew up in Switzerland for the first 13 years of my life. Yeah, it's a really interesting place to grow up for sure. But you know, then moved to near Bangor, Maine, when I was about 13. So. My dad's American and my mom's Swiss, so I grew up with all this different musical influence. And my dad was big into country music.
Right.
He wrote and sung songs himself, and so you know I got a lot of the old country stuff from him, Willie Nelson, and you know all the way up to Garth Brooks and, you know, Brooks and Dunn and all those guys. And then they also listen to a ton of just classic rock and, you know, like, I don't know, Phil Collins. Not that that's really the epitome of classic rock,
but it's awesome. You know,
but it's great. Yeah, exactly. So, but the Eagles and America and, you know, all the Tom Petty and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where, you know, that plus just folk music in general, and the Newport Folk Festival had a big hand in influencing the types of bands that I listened to, you know, at an early age. So
nice.
Now, when you meet up with your band members and you're starting out as like an open mic in Cambridge, how long does it take before you start saying we're seriously touring and we're serious musicians versus just like playing around?
Well, it's been about 6 years now, so about 6 years. No, I think it happened reasonably quickly. You know, it was we were working part-time jobs and playing the bars and you know, the touristy spots around Boston. And at one point, I lost my job, my 9-to-5, and had some unemployment plus a severance package, and so I was getting paid a good amount to do nothing. So,
what'd you do before this?
I worked. I did social media, kind of community management for a big online retailer.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, totally the opposite of what I'm doing now.
Yeah. You can say that. Yes.
Yeah, it was terrible. Not my thing. But but a blessing in disguise to have that job and then be let go. So, because that gave me the freedom to start taking music more seriously and really start traveling. You know.
Yeah. Now, we've talked to so many musicians and artists on the show, and people are probably completely sick of me asking this or think I might be obsessive, but I love finding out people's writing process. As far as a band of three piece, are you guys more of the, Martin comes to, comes to practice with an idea and you guys flush it out? Are you a let's jam and see what happens? Is everybody, or are you a conglomerate of everything? Because every person seems 100% completely different.
Yeah, I think that's one of the beautiful things about writing music.
Yep.
Is that there's no blueprint, you know, there's no one way to do it right. So in our case, I write the songs with Callie.
Mm-hmm.
We're a couple, so we live together. We are always around each other, which is good and bad, but but yeah, we write all the songs together, and so once the songs are done, we kind of bring them to the rest of the band, and then, you know, we arrange and we work together, and often other band members write their own parts as well. Our drummer contributes there too, and then, you know, in the studio, that's a whole other process with a producer and everything, so then the songs take shape again. And then we record a song, and yeah, then it's finally done, and then we play it live and change it again. So, you know, that's kind of how it goes. I meant to comment on your the amount of musicians you guys have on. You went on a downward slope a little bit, going from Stu Cook to Frank Turner to me. But you know,
consider yourself the rebound. That's the way to look at it. Come on now.
you know what, things just it's just very strange how things happen, and like that Stu Cook thing was like just very mind-blowing that it even happened, and it just
and it
happened, but what happens is like one thing just, I guess it's cliche, but one thing just leads to another. Like we interviewed someone on his label, and then they liked what we did with that interview, and blah 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 blah, was able to hook it up, and it was just very cool. And then Frank Turner was the opposite. I just like straight up emailed Frank Turner, and he was like, okay, I'll do it. So it's just interesting how it's just a constant grind to find people, and then, you know.
Yeah,
And then we found you, so.
Well, present company excluded, I think you guys have done a really great job finding a lot of different intriguing and interesting people. So I'm honored to be a part of it.
Thank you, man. I mean, and that's, you kind of summed it up right there. That's kind of literally been our goal. Like, and like you say, oh, these big some of our favorite guests have been the most random. Like, one of our favorite guests ever was a hippo attack survivor. Like, you know, right. Like just just things like that. So, and then,
well,
like,
that is wildly interesting. So, well, I don't blame you.
Yeah, well, that kind of segues into something I wanted to ask you. So, you know, obviously the power of social media and the power of being able to connect with fans and people and being able to stream music and share music. You write music without even being in the same location. And I know reading up on you guys, you know, your song Bees kind of got into one of these really – into one of these Spotify playlists, hit over 10 million streams. How has, like, streaming and has social media and streaming really helped you guys get into better positions and whatnot?
That's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, totally.
yeah, I think streaming and social media has helped us immensely in terms of just getting our music out there as a discovery platform.
Yeah.
I think it's second to none. You know, it's way easier nowadays for someone to hear about a mid-level band from Maine or Boston or whatever than it used to be 20 years ago. So, from that perspective, I really enjoy the streaming model I use it myself and love it. So, you know, I can't talk too badly about it, but then at the same time, it's not really a sustainable model.
No.
If you look at the payouts and you look at, you know, the lack of money that Spotify is making and, you know, the amount of people that are just doing it for free and not paying the $10 a month and thereby also not contributing to any of the payouts. So, you know, it's, I don't think it's in its final form yet. Put it that way.
Right.
Like I think it'll continue to evolve somehow. Kind of like the I did some homework on you guys. So I was driving home to help my dad this weekend. So I listened to a couple episodes, but I was fascinated by the Your Call football thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that type of thinking can be applied to the streaming model and can be applied to music as well. So actually you guys should put me in touch with her because she's really cool.
I like this concept. So here's, you start playing a song and then all of us in the audience vote on what's the next note.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'm going to just keep on saying 10-minute guitar solo for the entire night.
Yeah, we'll play three songs. It'll take 6 hours.
Little fish
just
concert going on.
Stairway to Heaven was something.
Yeah, you get to pick the lyrics and stuff. It's a teleprompter. I mean, the options
pick
are
the lyrics.
Devin, reading up on you, I see how you talk about the life on the road and that you tour so much and all, you don't even know places to call home anymore. I mean, it sounds like a blessing for a musician and still like a curse as a person. How do you kind of balance all of that going around with home life? And since you're dating a band member, how do you kind of balance your time together?
Right. Great question. Our touring has definitely slowed down in the last year and a half or so. We used to be on the road 10 to 11 months out of the year. We, you know, we didn't have apartments. We didn't, like so many musicians starting out and, you know, touring heavily. It's really the only way to make money. And then living in Boston while you're doing that and paying rent for an apartment that you're never there, that doesn't really make sense. So, so we were vagabonds for about 3 years, and that definitely tested every limit that I think we had, you know, not just personally, but also interpersonally between the three of us in the band. You know, you spend enough time with the same two people in a van, you're going to want to kill both of them. So,
right.
So yeah, I think it was both really helpful in terms of, you know, showing us what the road is like and what touring is like, and but it also really pushed us to the edge, and it forced us essentially to settle down a little bit and balance things out. And Callie and I bought a house about a year and a half ago, and our drummer Devin, he rented an apartment in Portland with his girlfriend, and so, you know, that transition really helped a lot, just having a home base and mm-hmm. having our own private space, because we were so used to just being perennial guests all the time. You know, we would just be, which is great. You know, you love, people are so nice and they take you in and they treat you so well. But at some point you start to feel like a burden and you just don't have any actual privacy outside of, you know, the bathroom. So, it gets pretty old pretty fast.
So, I mean, and I guess springboarding from there. So what is, what is on the horizon for the band? Are you guys thinking about recording? You just taking a break for now? What is, what are you guys working on?
Yeah. So the reason why we haven't been touring that much this whole year is because we've been working on the next album. So it's pretty much done. We're doing the final day of mixing tomorrow. So it's all tracked and everything. Nice. And it just needs to be kind of cinched up. And and then we'll start sort of releasing singles probably in the late summer. And you know, the full thing will probably be out early next year.
Can you, if I were to ask you what, like, are we kind of building on the last album? Are you going in a complete different direction? Because it kind of is fun to hear the progression of your guys' music. It seems to be almost, I don't know if aggressive is the word, but it seems to be incorporating more electric guitars, more, definitely louder or more vocals that have different range to them. And I really dig that. So where would you push this next album to? Where would you say that that's going?
Definitely going in that direction. The more, you know, the broader sound, a deeper, you know, multi-layered kind of. It's definitely bigger than the last album.
Cool.
It kind of is the natural next step for, you know, we recorded this EP, Paper Crown, and that kind of is a step towards this.
Cool.
So, it's different in so many ways, and we're continuing to explore what we want to do, because one of the rules that we set out with from the get-go was just, you know, there are no rules when it comes to songwriting, and we're going to play and write what we want to write. And if it's all over the place and, you know, if it's not continuous, then so be it. But this record is different in that it's largely political. A lot of the songs are political, and not because we set out to do that, but just because we couldn't help, you know, that's kind of what's on our minds, and so that's what we wrote about. So
it's strange you would write a political record in such a non-political time.
Such an idyllic moment in history, right? Yeah.
Turned on the news, nothing going on.
Nothing
at all.
No.
Paradise.
What would
Sorry, go on.
I was about to ask you, doing all these albums, what would you say is the most underrated song that you absolutely love that the band does that you think doesn't get talked about enough?
Ooh. I think I would say there's a song called Oak on our first full-length album. And we never play it live. We don't, you know, we don't really touch it anymore. And it's kind of a solo-ish song. You know, it's just kind of me and the guitar.
Yeah.
And I just like the song for personal reasons. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's an amazing song or anything like that. I just like to play it.
So keep it where it's rated. Got it.
Right.
Martin, I really want to thank you for coming on. I could talk to you for a long time about your guys' music, because I really dig it, and you really have, like I said, this really just came out of something as simple as, you know, me doing some, you know, obviously some awesome workouts, some amazing workout.
Of course,
No, but, you know, hearing, I really think Archers was the first song I heard, and I was like, oh, you know, this band's right up my alley. What I like is that I clicked on Archers and then clicked on your other music, and I didn't hear Archers 20 times in a row. And I think, like you said, the rule of writing, you know, whatever comes to you, whatever you want, there's going to be no rules, really does come through in your band. So if that is what you guys are going for, you definitely are accomplishing it. So kudos to that, man.
That's good to know.
So I guess if people want to check the band out or say hi or you know, what's the best place to go get a sample of the Ballroom Thieves?
Yeah, just online, you know.
Yeah.
Ballroomthieves.com, I before E, which is
it's tough.
Often a mistake that
you're
people
asking
make,
a lot of our audience.
It's a lot. I get it. I get it. that's why I mention it, you know,
right.
Just because I've messed it up multiple times, but and it's my band name, so
right.
But yeah, anywhere online, we're on all the things, all the social media, and you know, as tough as that is, sometimes we're on there. So,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, you can find us on there. But yeah, I want to say thanks for having me on because I really, because of this, I looked into you guys and I started listening to some of the episodes and I really liked it. So
oh, cool,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let's get Asbury'd sometime.
I was just gonna say, when are you coming to Jersey?
We were just there. We were at the the Saint. Yeah.
Ah, dude, I played in this. What's interesting about the Saint? I played in that when I was in a high school band, but yeah. I played in that in college, and then later on, now, you know, 10, 12 years later, I've gotten to do comedy there now 3 times. So it's kind of come full circle. It's a really cool little spot.
I love that place. It's awesome. One of the diviest spots around, but it's perfect. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know the Saint, you cannot see a part of the wall without seeing a sticker. Basically, the entire place is covered in stickers, and it does have tremendous sound. I would tell you that.
Yeah, it sounds great in there. Yeah, and the staff is great. You know, there's nice people, nice folks around. So,
well, I do hope when you come to Jersey to come check out a show and grab a beer with you or whatnot,
or
we'll be down there. Yeah, we play in Little Five Points down in Atlanta.
All right, I'll check you guys out.
Yeah, please do. And you know, I'll send an email around to you guys too, and you know, we'll get you some tickets and stuff. We can hang out.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we'll stay in touch. And really, good luck with the album. Good luck with the house.
Thank you.
Good luck with the
mattress modeling and the Pog movie.
Oh, wow.
We should talk about the Pog movie, maybe, because that, I thought, had some serious potential.
You know, sometimes I forget what I even say on here. So you know what? You're reminding me, and I have
like close to the audience. But
I have a picture. I have a picture to post of the mattress modeling. So please, I'll throw that up either tonight or tomorrow. I will put that on our on our page so you can see what's going on here, man. And there's plenty of that to come. So.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
When you're doing your live concerts, have the photo in the background as you're doing one of your more popular songs.
Yeah, or
I think it will mesh up very well.
As long as they have that slow motion effect of you just backwards swan diving
right
into the mattress.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe it could be like the bass drum head, like me and my wife.
Now we're getting into something.
Martin, thanks so much, man, and take care. And we really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Me too.
See, Berlo, how cool is it when like someone does research on us?
Well, he mentioned 5 things. They're all your things, so I'm a little left out back here, you know. Yeah, I love your mattress stuff and the Pogs and the stuff. What's that second voice on? Who is that?
What did you want him to say? You want him to be like, I love your NASCAR, your Dukes of Hazzard car.
Oh,
when you press the buttons, it makes me laugh so hard.
I like to think somewhat I'm involved with this show in some minor, convenient way. You know?
Keep thinking that. But Martin Early, guys, go check out the Ballroom Thieves. I really, really, really dig their music. All right, so that was Martin Early of a band called the Ballroom Themes. Everybody, you guys should go check them out. They got a really, really cool sound, especially if you kind of like, I don't know, like a little bit of folk influenced music. They got a cool sound, and like I said, I just found them on a random playlist and became a fan. So hopefully, someone finds us on a random playlist and becomes a fan.
One can only wish, Scotty. Lord knows everybody we tell don't listen, so.
One fan would be nice at this point. So the other day, so yesterday, or I guess it was 2 days ago, I had to go out and I had gotten my dad an Instapot for Father's Day.
Okay.
No, I love my Instapot, and he likes cooking, so we're like, oh, it'll be a good present. But that's not the story here, Berlo. The story is I found it interesting. I had to go to Bed Bath & Beyond, right?
Oh, okay.
And my wife keeps, like, every Bed Bath & Beyond, like, coupon. I don't even know. I don't know. They send you those, like, 20% ones in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I'm going. She's like, all right, take a coupon. Take a. And she hands me a stack. Like, it looked like a cash roll of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. I'm like, well, I don't think I could just continuously, like, use these till there's, like, no percent. I said, I think one's enough. She's like, no. You never know. You can maybe sometimes you could use two. You could keep some in your car. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, listen, I just need one. And she had, like, a moment. It was like, no, you don't understand. Like, these are, like, it was as if she was telling me these are the equivalent to, like, gold. Like, they were the most valuable things we had in the house at the time.
Like, she's trying to explain to you, like, it's almost a thing of faith or something. Like, no, generations of my family have lived in the United States and lived off of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons.
My parents...
You can't just go in there with one. That we call that the rookie.
My ancestors sailed here with only Bed Bath & Beyond coupons in their pockets.
They talk to the Vikings. They're like, what is this bed and bath? It's beyond me. And
They traded them for furs and were able to make it through the winter. You don't understand the value of a 20% coupon. But now,
just imagine her in line and somebody's like, oh, I have a $5 off coupon. I look down, only, you only brought the $5 off coupon? Get out of my line.
So
you do not deserve an express lane Bed Bath & Beyond, young lady.
So now, so I go and get the thing, and then later on we got to leave to go down somewhere or whatever. And I had the money roll of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons on my front seat, and I thought, like, that was enough. So she gets in the passenger side and is like, huh. Grabs the clip of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons, now opens my glove compartment, okay, and with the other hand, takes another stack of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons, combines them with this said stack she already gave me, and jams them into my glove compartment.
Now I'm starting to question your wife. I'm starting to wonder if Alex is running around the lake, opening up people's mailboxes, wrapping everything that says Bed Bath & Beyond on it.
That is true. I did not check if it said, like, our address on each one of these. So I'm like, did you just hide Bed Bath & Beyond coupons in my car? She's like, well, you never know when you're going to need them. Now I'm picturing I'm going to be, like, opening my dresser drawers. The coupon's going to – I'm going to go reach in my pockets like that, which just washed. You know, pull one out, go in my guitar case, and there's, like, a bunch of them littered in there. I'm thinking this is one of those things that I'm, like, finding little quirks that I didn't know about.
See, I'm imagining a Survivor type of movie. Like, you're alone in your truck, and it's a rainy night, and you just slip on some ice, and you – crash down the into the woods, and right. Nobody knows you're there. You got no cell reception, and you're trapped under your truck. Right. And all you have to survive is to eat these Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. Now, if Alex is there, she'll probably tell you to starve because I'm not going to pay full price at Bed Bath & Beyond.
You think there's enough nutrition in a coupon to keep me going?
I mean, there's got to be fiber in there with those paper. I mean, is it still paper or is it plastic?
See, now I would take the Bed Bath & Beyond coupon if this was a survival situation and use it to start a fire. The coupons are paper. You would just go straight to eating them.
Yeah. There's no time to delay. I'm not even calling. I got full reception. I can call 911. I can order pizza out there, but I'm going to start chewing on some coupons.
So you're just sitting in your living room, and you're like, babe, leave me alone. This is a survival situation.
You guys are foolish. You're going to wait for these. This is the right time to eat them.
Well, have you noticed any – like, was there anything that you – okay, so you were dating Izzy for a long time. You got engaged. You guys got married, like, right after that. Is there anything that, like, didn't seem to reveal itself until after the wedding day?
after the wedding day?
Like, was she like, boom, I'm into, I don't know, something, like, or well, does something?
I mean, I think we talked about it before, the Disney thing, as huge as she is on Disney, I think the initial, like, discussions, I never knew it was, like, full-blown, okay, looking at a room, this was going to come to this. It was more like, oh, I like Disney. There was no, you live Disney, my dear. You
right.
Embody Disney. You bleed Lilo and Stitch.
And then after you bleed, you need Lilo and Stitches.
I saw what you did there.
So now the Disney thing, do you think that it just exploded at one point, or it was suppressed for that long, or this is almost like a new obsession?
I think what led to it is just the fact we had a house where we both could have a room, and then it kind of went to that. Because even in the apartment, and you were in my apartment, it wasn't like she bought Disney stuff.
Never. I mean, the most I remember was, like, she liked to go, like, you guys would go check out, like, the one I'm thinking of, Coco or something. Like, we went and saw it or whatever. I don't remember ever, like, a Disney room. In fact, I remember you guys getting all sorts of new furniture and decorations, and I don't remember any of the Disney stuff.
None of that was in there, yeah. I mean, it was go to movies, and we went to Disney World, but as we got here, it got more and more, like, oh, there's another thing. And then it'd be like, so, honey, I noticed a new bag. Yeah, isn't it cute? It's like, that's your eighth Disney bag. It was cute around number four.
Do you think that maybe when you guys went to Disney World, something like got jostled loose and it just, like now it's just seeping. It's an out of control leak.
Now that's starting to sound like a horror movie. You know? Like this guy looks like Goofy. He's a little off, and he hugs her, and then like her eyes turn black, and then it's like, we need to buy Disney stuff.
Exactly. I mean, this could be the start of it. One day you might come home and she's like dressed like Donald Duck or Daisy Duck, and you know she starts to try to convert you, and you don't want to switch over, and so the killing begins. Or you start like abducting children. She starts abducting children and like keeping them there and making them act as Disney characters and locking them in your house.
I don't think she'll go that far. I mean, I could see her.
How do you know?
Circles to the top of my head as I wake up to it and say, "Aren't you the most sexy Mickey?"
No,
but I mean, I wouldn't say kidnapping. I mean, bodily harm to me, sure. Kidnapping, I don't know yet.
Mike, it starts with Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. Before you know it, your organs are being harvested to save more money on a toaster.
They say if you give them a kidney, you can get 40% off on a curing.
Has the Disney started to escape just the Disney room at all?
There are minor pieces here and there. Like, like some of the frames in other rooms are like Disney. There's like one plush doll on a bench there. But like every time there's a little joke about maybe you could put something in Mike's man cave, I'm like, try it once, see the result. just said, I will literally tell you, I won't stop you, but you will definitely not stop me after I see what happens.
Now, so you haven't seen anything like kind of enter the living room or the kitchen or the bathroom?
I mean, there's nothing in the bathroom.
You have to quarantine it. You have to keep it into that that corner.
Well, that's, yeah, there. There's been minor discussions. Oh, this might look in the bathroom. Like, you got a room? Nope.
She's testing.
Nope. I could put it in the guest room. Nope. Nope. Yeah, I think that's about it. It's a Mickey and Minnie on, like, a little bench that we have in the living room, which is fine. It's not obnoxious or anything like that. There are, like, some... I don't even know if the frames are there. I mean, obviously, the pictures are in the frames, but I don't necessarily.
I can't wait till we flash forward 10 years from now, and it just looks like a miniature Cinderella's castle. Your entire house has been transformed.
Well, it's going to be basically like when Russia was taking all over Europe. I'm going to be the Ukraine. I'm going to be that small piece that's still fighting back, you know. I'll be in my man cave. I'm like, no, you are not invading my land. No.
Your man cave will just be a closet at that point with all your Philly stuff like surrounding. You just stand in the closet.
I'll be down here with a shotgun and all saying, you are not putting Mickey on my damn Ricky Rudd diecast, okay?
Oh, God, what goes on down there?
I come down here to the General Lee's, turned into Herbie the love bug. Was that the name of the movie?
Herbie,
right?
Yeah, Herbie the love bug was the name of the...
Yeah, that was a Disney film. Yeah. All right, joke was solid. Continue.
great joke.
I'll pat myself on that one.
Yeah, so that's the only... I guess that's the first thing I've really noticed. Like, wow, I've never noticed that in... You know, we've been together for like 4 years. I never noticed this accumulation of Bed Bath & Beyond coupons. But I guess maybe it's a good thing. Maybe she just wants to save money on home goods or something like that. So
let's dive into this a little bit more for one sec now.
Sure.
Anytime you need to buy something, is her first suggestion always, oh, we can go to Bed Bath & Beyond and get that?
Surprisingly, no. No. I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if she's just – I don't think it's Bed Bath & Beyond itself. I think it's more of the idea of these magic pieces of paper that can save you 20% on every – I don't think it's the store she's obsessed with. I think maybe it's the collection.
Savings itself.
Yes, collecting these magic saving tokens like that she has. I don't know because it's never been like, let's go to Bed Bath & Beyond. She's never really done that. So – I don't know. I guess this is like a to-be-continued kind of thing over the years, mm-hmm. and I'll keep my eye on it as we embark on this journey called marriage here together. But I'm gonna keep the listeners updated on any occurrences I notice or any weird behaviors. Maybe there's other things I don't know that are going to pop up, so... Mike, you do the same. Keep an eye on make sure that Disney room stays contained and fight it.
It's quarantine. We're safe for right now. Oh, God, the zombies are out.
All these Mickey Mouses just slowly leaking out of the freaking. Jesus, Dominus.
I smell salt.
Well, I guess before we go tonight, bro, so we're going to try a new game here. I guess you could call it a game or a discussion point, I would say. Now, this is kind of brand new to the listeners. This is actually our second go at this. It was kind of one of those things. We just got a lot of guests and a lot of episodes and a lot of content, and it just never made the cut. Not because it was bad, just because sometimes I don't want our episodes to be 9 hours long. Mm-hmm. As much as the audience wants that, you got to leave them wanting more, Virgo. You got to leave them wanting more. So
we hit the core 7.25 grouping of podcasts. I mean. You're there for 9 hours at work, 8 or 9 hours. We want to film most of it and then also give you time to actually look like you're doing something. Possibly while wearing a sailor outfit, as we talked about earlier.
Well, we're going to do a little kind of game / discussion point called Mount Rushmore here. Now, everybody's been sitting around with their buddies and been like, Who's your Mount Rushmore? I don't know. I feel like over the last couple of years, radio hosts have really like sports radio guys are always doing their Mount Rushmore of Yankees. I know Mike Francesa always gets, hey, you're not in the Mount Rushmore. You got Mantle, you got Root, you got Gehrig, and then the fourth one's up for debate. But those three, you can't debate. And he's always. I remember like a couple of years ago, he got so caught on that it was like an everyday like full show thing. I'm like, Jesus Christ, Mike. But we're not really going to talk about sports or something basic like that. We're going to try to pick a different topic. Not every week because you don't want to hear this every week. But, you know, every once in a while we're going to play a little Mount Rushmore. Now, So this week I chose the topic, okay, which will leave Berlew to have the next topic. So we are, I figured nothing better than an old throwback conversation, get you excited about your childhood, Berlew, something you don't see too much of anymore, and that is arcades, okay? Now, little story. When I think of arcades, yeah, there was the ones in the mall. I didn't get to go that often, but there was an arcade for me at an Italian ice store. It was Maglione's Italian Ice, and they eventually just turned into like the carts you would see at a park. But there was actually like a home base store, and you would buy ice, and then next door there was like a room just full of maybe like 20 video games. And my dad would take us; we'd go there with a $5 bill. Get some quarters and play arcades. Now, arcades, somewhat a thing of the past. Not really. It's kept alive at, like, the Shore. Kept alive at, you know.
And different things like bowling centers. Yeah. Stuff. Like they're always around, but there's not, like, as we grew up, like, a primary all I'm doing is arcade kind of business.
Yeah, I'm not calling you and being like, hey, Friday, me, you, 8 o'clock, arcade, let's go. Plus it would be a long flight, but, just do your arcade in Georgia and hop back on the plane. But yeah, arcades, I can't say, I went deep into them, but I, like you said, bowling, I remember I played on a bowling team after CCDs on Saturday morning and, they would bus us over to the bowling alley. And a big thing was after you were done, everybody would kind of hover around the video games and wait before the bus would come get you, and bring you back. And the video games kind of became a big thing. So we're going to go with the personal Mount Rushmores of, arcade games. So we're each going to pick four. I wouldn't be surprised if we have, a couple of the same, who knows, but we're going to pick the same four, and then we're also going to hopefully put this up on our site and whatnot and let you guys decide what you think and what your personal Mount Rushmores are. So let's check it out. Berlew, would you like to serve first?
Sure, I think I'll go first.
All right.
For my first one, I got to think of it like George Washington, just the OG.
Okay, I think I see where you're going.
Of arcade games here. And my first selection will be the classic upon classic. No matter who you are, if you played a video game, you probably played this game, Pac-Man.
Gotta be Pac-Man. Pac-Man, Mrs. Pac-Man, I don't want to hear the whole different. There, she has a bow. Same game, classic, you know, I still think you find it in around arcades. I still, like, I know, like, there's a bar in Jersey City here called Barcade, and I know Pac-Man is one of the games that is sitting in the bar. You can't go wrong. It's kind of a game that is ingrained in everyone's, like, vernacular. You know, like, everybody, you know, even kids who probably never played Pac-Man know what Pac-Man is.
Yeah.
So, I got to agree with you there. I did not put that on my top four. The thought had crossed my head. But I get it. I get a salute to the OG, a salute to Pac-Man and his spouse, Ms. Pac-Man, and the ghosts that made history, if you will. All right, Berlew, I'm going to go. Now, there's a certain type of game I really kind of liked. So some of mine are kind of similar, but I'm going to put – I don't know if you ever played the Simpsons arcade game.
A few times I have, yes.
You're basically a side-scrolling kind of game. You're beating up people. You're skateboarding. I remember one of the cool things was, like, you threw people towards the screen, and that was, like, kind of mind-blowing. So the original Simpsons arcade game for me was pretty up there. I remember, like I said, at the old bowling alleys, everybody gathered around. You obviously, your Homer, Lisa, Bart, and Maggie, I don't think you could be Homer, Bart,
Marge,
and Marge.
Homer,
and
Marge.
Yeah, I don't think you could be Maggie. I think like Maggie was like around every once in a while, and you could like pick her up and throw her.
Oh, she was the plot point of the game because
yes,
apparently she stole a diamond from Mr. Burns, and Mr. Smithers kidnapped her. So the Simpsons go out and try to get Maggie back.
Wow, solid memory there.
Hey, if you're going to build the Mount Rushmore, you better know the story. Come on now. I'm sorry, I didn't tell the Pac-Man story. So this dude really likes power pellets, but he's getting chased by ghosts, and every once in a while he eats a cherry for some reason.
Are those what those are called, the power pellets?
That's the ones where they turn the ghosts blue, and wow. You can chomp on it. I guess they're just pellets, the other ones. There
just,
was
just
a
kibble. Pac-Man,
I guess. I don't know. I do remember there was a Pac-Man animated series for
really?
A while. Yeah, I think it was like one or two seasons. And it was just the same thing. It's like, oh, no, the ghost eats a power pellet. Oh, no, Pac-Man. And that was pretty much the episode.
Now, was Pac-Man a good guy? Like, was he, like, the ghosts were bad guys, right? Like, in the series?
Yeah. Okay. Of course. Yeah. I mean, we don't know the full story. Maybe Pac-Man killed them and made them ghosts, and they're just trying to avenge their deaths. But, you know, I guess we have to call Atari and find that out. I don't know.
All right. Well, that was my pick. The Simpsons is my first pick on the Mount Rushmore of arcade games.
Okay. For my next one, I think more people know it nowadays for the video game of it, but it started out in the arcades, and I just remember that was what I considered the original fighter game. Now, there's some debate on that because I kind of have it as a backup another game, but I'm putting number two on Mount Rushmore as Mortal Kombat.
Ah, interesting. I thought about that myself. Mortal Kombat was it was everything when it came out, but it was between that and Street Fighter, and those two different games, similar fighting game, but very different as far as the look, the feel. I gotta agree with you. Mortal Kombat was just, and then like. People knew how to do the fatalities and stuff like that. I was like, wow, like how, you know, like you, it would kind of spread, you know, it would spread back and forth. Like, hey, how do you do that? Like there's always the one guy that kind of knew how to do everyone's move that had way too much knowledge and just killed everyone. So I got to say,
this is pre-internet. You couldn't just look up, oh, how do I do reptiles fatality? It's like, I heard from a guy, if you do back down, Ford's B, you rip his head off.
Yes. All right, a solid pick. Obviously, that I considered either of those two, Street Fighter. Like I said, I played them in the arcade, but I probably got more into them on the Super Nintendo. Was the was where I really got into it. All right, I'm going to go with a little bit different feeling of a game. It's a game I personally fell in love with for a little while. And it's a shooting game by the name of Time Crisis. I don't know if you ever played Time Crisis, but it's the one where you step on the pedal to pop up and shoot. And then like when you release it, you go down. Really good game. Still holds up. They made a whole bunch of them after that. But I just remember being blown away by the pedal part of it, and like the step and the gun was a big part of it, because a lot of times in those gun games the guns were just like plastic pieces with the trigger. This one actually had that, like it would cock back, you know, like when you shot. So it really gave you a kind of a cool feeling, and I remember pumping a lot of quarters into Time Crisis. So that's my number two on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, that was the game, much like what's going to be number three, where it's like sometimes you play with the person and they're panicking. You're like, you got to reload. You got to reload. Shoot outside the screen. Or sometimes the cocket. Or just, there was always one kid. It's like, will you reload? It's not shooting. No, we'll go down.
Good. It's a good teamwork game. Very into it. Like I could pick that up right now and like play with you and probably still be very entertained. So,
no doubt.
Time Crisis is number two for me.
Pretty much in the same genre as I try to spread out my Rushmore, not all with one type of game. I'm going with a shooter, and the one I remember the most playing and like just be eating up quarters and became one of the absolute crappiest movies I've ever saw in the theaters. I'm going with House of the Dead.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think of that one. Now you're giving me kind of like a throwback thought here. House of the Dead, another kind of similar shooter, a little darker, you know, like a little, you know, getting zombies.
And little extra stuff, like sometimes the zombies were coming up with axes in front of their head where you couldn't shoot them, so you had to do strategy. I mean,
solid.
It was definitely a solid game and just a quarter eater, and you just got excited when you actually, if you're good enough to get into the house, you know. I mean, when you first play it and all, you always get killed on that gate just going, trying to get in.
Oh my God, yeah. I don't think I ever got into the house. Now thinking of it. I got to say, an honorable mention in this category, which probably is not on a lot of people's lists, but if you played it, did you ever play the Aerosmith shooting game?
No,
Oh my God. I know this sounds crazy, but it was an Aerosmith like gun game. It was a shooter, like kind of like a wild shooter, and the thing like kind of angled all over the place, and you could, the one button you click, it would fire CDs at the enemy. I'm not making this up, but a truly really good shooting game. And like every once in a while you get like Steven Tyler, like, "All right!" Like when he's when you shot different things, like, yeah.
Can you imagine them getting described this? All right, Steven, we're in the recording studio. Now this kid just shot a military man with one of your CDs and you killed him. You're really excited it happened. You know? So let me be like, "All right!" That's good. But I didn't feel like the true emotion, like the CD got smashed into this guy. We need to feel it in front of your lungs. All right.
So the game was called Revolution X. It came out in 1994, featuring the rock band Aerosmith. It features gameplay similar to Midway's early Terminator 2 Judgment Day game. Guys, go check out the very modern Revolution X, Steven Tyler, Aerosmith game. And their music would be like playing during, while you were shooting. Honorable mention to that's probably one that not a lot of people, either remember or played, but it was a good one. All right. I gotta go. For me, I don't know either one of these two could be my number one. They kind of sit at one and two in the, you know, one and 1A, if you will, in my Mount Rushmore. No real number one, two different type of games. But I'm going to go with something similar to the Simpsons game. It is the X-Men video game. Now.
Also a classic there.
This was a quarter eater. Now, if you remember, you had your Wolverine, you had your Cyclops, you had Dazzler, I think you had Storm. But you all know who the real weapon was in that game, and that was Colossus. Mm-hmm. Okay? Colossus' special move, he would just go, "Oh!" and just flex, and just some like beam would come out of his body and like clear people around him. And this was your side scrolling game similar to the Simpsons, Ninja Turtles obviously being an honorable mention there. But the X-Men one was just absolutely a quarter demolisher for me. Disappointed when I ran out. And those games just get there. There is something missing about the complicatedness of video games now, where I don't see it as much as, okay, I get through this board, beat the boss, you know, get to the next board. Like, I feel like boards aren't really a thing anymore. It's more of this immersive world that you're kind of always in. But it was kind of cool to get to the end, beat Bebop, beat Rocksteady, or whatever, whoever you got to take care of. And you're like, "All right, I got to the next guy." And you kind of knew the order of, you know, like, it would kind of exponentially get harder and harder and harder. So X-Men for me, 1A.
Yeah, then nowadays, it's pretty much either like open worlds or fighting games or items like that. There is no like mystery. There's no, "All right, we got to team up on this," really. I mean, I guess in Fortnite they have it. I never played Fortnite, but
no.
I think it's,
I mean, there's
like
a lot
that.
Of games, but it's the simplicity, but also yet the kind of like you know, the you're kind of climbing a ladder, like just getting to harder boss. And it was like a format. You get through all the, like in the Ninja Turtles. I remember the Ninja Turtles going from the arcade game to the system game, and that being like amazing. I spent a lot of time on Super Nintendo playing the Ninja Turtle game. My God, like endless amounts of time playing that game. But so yeah, number two or 1A for me, X-Men.
Yep. Well, my number one, you pretty much just talked about it for about 5 minutes right now. In the same genre as X-Men and The Simpsons, it's got to be Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
Oh, Turtles in Time, though. That's a little different.
Yeah, I'm going with that one.
Okay.
I mean, they've had a few of the games, but that was just like everything about it. You know, you get to play any of the Turtles. I mean, you get all four. You get strategy. I was when I usually played the Turtles, I was more of a Donatello guy. You know, I figured the bow always gave me a little extra range versus the other ones. So you're always getting slapped around. So
Donnie was a good video game character. Yeah. It wasn't my favorite turtle as far as show or movies, but you were right. The bow, you know, the bow definitely gave you, like I said, you said, a little range.
Yeah, like I was a Michelangelo guy, but anytime you play the games, it's like you're basically 2 pixels away from the person to hit them with the nunchucks and all.
Right.
I could at least get some distance and run away, you know?
Now, Turtles in Time also kind of remember how this feature of being able to like throw characters toward the screen. If I remember correctly, isn't it like a board, like where you were on like skateboards, kind of like flying through the like a board,
yeah,
you,
like yeah. flying jets, if I recall, and just jumping around, and you know, all you're doing is just super kicking people. No, that's basically right. The entire round. So
yeah, I gotta agree with you. I mean, obviously, to me, like it was like Simpsons, X-Men, and Ninja Turtles were all kind of intertwined together. I was just kind of thinking of in the arcade. I remember The Simpsons and X-Men a lot. The Ninja Turtles one on Super Nintendo was probably my number one of that kind of game. That's where I kind of drew the line. But yes. So, Burla, I just looked it up. You can get yourself a Turtles in Time game. You got some extra cash, right? You've been yard sailing and wheeling and dealing.
I got some of the spare coupons that Alex didn't give to you. So
I don't know if you could use it, the Bed Bath & Beyond coupons here, but you could certainly try. A nice Turtles in Time arcade video game right now. You can get it for a slick $3,200.
Okay. 5 years down the line, that's the goal. Added to the man cave.
That's it. Well,
that will get people over. That's the guaranteed, oh my God, we got to get over their house again this weekend.
Yes, yes.
Kind of thing.
All right. I guess that leads me to my number one. And this ties into the show a little bit. It kind of goes back to maybe one of the guests we had on, sort of.
Dave Piscina. Gotcha.
Yes.
Go back to that episode, everybody.
No, my number one, probably Mount Rushmore arcade, and also translated into one of my favorite games of all time. That would be NBA Jam.
Ah.
I mean, this was right around the time where those Midway games came out, that and Blitz and whatever, and they were just really, really entertaining to play with a friend. Dunking from the halfway line. He's on fire. That whole thing. This is right when I had fallen in love with the Seattle Supersonics, because Sean Kemp and them had become, and they just became a really interesting team. And the NBA Jam thing and the NBA Live on Super Nintendo, that kind of all tied into me really liking the team. And you got to remember, like, Jordan was never in any of the games. Remember he was never
licensing.
Yeah. So he was never in it. Ken Griffey was never in any of the games. So like the Bulls were like, oh, you know, I like them, but I just kind of went with the Sonics. And I got to say NBA Jam probably added to a lot of that. Now, in my old house, I had at one point seriously considered getting an NBA Jam system. I remember coming close to buying one for like $600 or something like that. It like needed just to be like cleaned up and stuff, but they said it worked, and I just fell short and never got it. I remember later in my life, like when me and my friends were kind of in that 21, 22 area, there was a bar around the street from us called the Players Pub. and it was not a good, it was a dump. But what they did offer was free NBA Jam. So, yeah. So you're having a couple beers and your favorite game from childhood is there and everyone kind of buys into it. It was hours of like 22, 23 year olds playing NBA Jam and getting really into it and, you know, putting drinks on it. Like, you know, you win this game, I'll buy you a drink and whatnot. So NBA Jam still held up. And this also ties into, I may have said this before, but I have a tradition with my cousin. On Christmas Eve, we've been doing this since probably, I don't know, I was probably 16, 15, and he was like 12 or 13. We've been playing each other in NFL Blitz for PlayStation. We play a best of seven every Christmas Eve. He's now a father of two kids, like, but we still, as long as he's in town, we play it and have a battle. I won this year, thank God, after taking three straight losing Christmases. But it does
the trophy back home.
Brought it back home where it belongs, and that just ties into NBA Jam. Blitz is basically NBA Jam for football, you know. But that would be my number one on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I guess an honorable mention for me was the WWF Superstars.
Great game.
The arcade version. That was always fun and all. Just figuring out whipping people and drop kicking.
Yep.
And it was just nothing but button mashing at that age. But it was so much goddamn fun doing that there.
I remember just loving the graphics of that game, like just loving how they looked, like being able to choose all the characters. I remember later on my buddy Taryn, who was one of those kids who could always get you pirated stuff. He was like an internet dork, like before anybody was. And I remember he had got me like a CD-ROM of WrestleFest, and I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And it never quite worked perfectly, and it wasn't the same, but it was still like there was this nostalgia that I was just chasing with that game. So I could totally attest to that. So those are our Mount Rushmores. You guys, we'll put them up, and maybe we'll take some honorable mentions. I'm sure there's some that we're completely forgetting. So maybe we'll throw them up on Twitter and our Facebook and see what people like and enjoy. Burley, do you know what we're going to be doing for next time?
Yeah, I think I will, Scott. I'm going to say we're going to do, for the next Mount Rushmore, the Mount Rushmore of overrated rock singers.
Overrated. So is the Mount Rushmore, like, would your number one be, like, the most overrated singer? Like, he's terrible?
Yeah, it's just the basic concept is the four big name rock stars where you're like, oh my God, they didn't do jack. They weren't that good.
Okay. All right, I got it. I like it. I already know. I pretty much know my number one, that's for sure. but yeah, there's definitely a couple in there that might take a little thinking. There's a lot of music out there and people who are gigantic, but I like the overrated part of it. So all right, Berlo, I think it's time to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, Scotty. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little sick of you anyway, so
well anything to promote before we gotta go?
If you go back to episode 186, we had a great discussion with legendary wrestler Al Snow. He has a book out right now called Self-Help, Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. And he discussed a bunch of different crazy stories and all. Yep. Something I actually heard while I was listening to a podcast of people talking about his book. He tells a story how when he was on the road for wrestling in his day, not every basically convenience store, garage, or if you will, gas station place had a microwave. And if it's late, you got to eat. So he would get like a couple sandwiches and he would jimmy it up on under his bar hood and he would drive for a few hundred miles and then he would open the hood and eat the food. But he was a real fun guest.
He was
really, really great wrestler. So check it out on go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. The name of the book is Self-Help Life Lessons from the Bizarre Career of Al Snow.
Nice. Yeah, and Al Snow was my favorite wrestler of that era, definitely. So it was really cool to talk to him. And I'm just going to promote a show. I feel like I haven't promoted a comedy show in a while. It's been a good month of comedy. Had a bunch of shows this week. Some very interesting audience members, that's for sure. But I want to promote, if anybody's ever been to New Hope, Pennsylvania, really awesome town. Really cool town. A lot of cool restaurants, bars, really nice strip to walk. Walk over by the bridge by Lambertville there. And there's a place called J&P's, John and Peter's. I've done a show there a few times, and the only way I can describe it is like, it's like this magic little room. It's really low and dark in the basement, and it's like an old rock club, and I barely fit in the ceiling, but it has all these amazing musicians have played in it before, and I've done comedy there a few times. The show kind of starts when it starts, like when people get there. Like, it says the doors are 9:30, but you know, it might start at 10, 10:15 when people are there. And it's just an awesome place. And my buddy Mike D'Alto is having his birthday comedy extravaganza, which I'll be on it. And Joe Fernandez, a good friend of the cast, will be on it. So it's just a really good time. It is free to come on out. So that is June 28th at 9:30. If you are interested in coming on out, it is a great time. There's something very magical about that room. I'm very much a believer of like the past of a place kind of sinking into the culture of a place. Like, you know, they say like the Comedy Store has like ghosts in it of just amazing performers. I believe that this is one of those type of places.
Or the old vapor room where the ghosts of the Confederate soldiers in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the vapor room. The ghosts of great podcast done in there.
Yeah, what was that, episode 26?
Long, long time ago. But anyway, guys, that's it for us. I want to thank Martin Early of the Ballroom Thieves. You guys got to go check them out. They're a really cool band. Really good sound. I enjoy them a lot, so go check them out. And that's it. You can catch us on a couple different places. Go check us out. You go on our Facebook to see all the different places you can catch us. If you're into listening to internet radio, you can check out comingrightup.org. You can check us out on Discovery County Network. So there's a lot of places to check us out. And most of all, what you can do is if you enjoy this episode or any other episode, leaving a review on iTunes really helps us out. It really is the best thing you can do. And that's really it. So, guys, with that, life is funny. Keep the wind at your back and tune in next week. Bye bye.
See ya. Never make good kings by it.